Wednesday, July 16th, 1969, 6 o'clock a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Countdown, T-minus 3 hours 30 minutes to liftoff. Clear Florida sky. Elevated 300 feet in the air on an upper platform of Kennedy Space Center's Launch Pad 39A, I stood alone on the grating of the towering gantry. A few yards away, loaded with more than 2,000 tons of liquid oxygen and hydrogen propellant, the giant Saturn V rocket also stood, primed for liftoff as the countdown progressed. Large shards of frost were already falling off its outer skin from the super-chilled liquid oxygen within. Hours earlier, my Apollo 11 crewmates, Neil Armstrong and Michael Collins and I, had enjoyed a pre-dawn steak and eggs breakfast, an astronaut tradition, and had gone through an elaborate suiting up with NASA's equipment team, helping us get into our pressurized suits, helmets, gloves, and boots. Along with our pad leader, Günter Wendt, a gray-haired man of German descent who had worked on almost every launch since the early days of the Mercury program, the three of us, carrying our portable air conditioning ventilators as though we were heading off to work with our briefcases, loaded into the courier van for the short drive out to the launch pad. Slowly, we ascended in the gantry elevator, passing red metal-grated walkways at various intervals leading to strategic areas of the rocket. Each of us had trained for his entire life leading up to this moment. As a crew, we had worked together for nearly a year, with Neil and I initially on the backup crew for the gutsy Apollo 8 mission, the first to fly around the moon after only two prior missions with the Saturn V, and then with Mike as the prime crew for the Apollo 11 mission. Because of the seating order in the cramped conditions of the Apollo Command module, comparable to the interior of a small van in which the three of us would live and work for more than a week, climbing over one another to enter the craft while wearing our spacesuits was next to impossible. So Günter stopped the elevator about three-fourths of the way up and dropped me off to wait there on the metal grating while he, Neil, and Mike proceeded two more flights up to where the elevator opened at the White Room, the final preparation area leading to the narrow hatch opening to the spacecraft. In less than 3.5 hours, if all went well, the enormous rocket with the power of an atomic bomb would release an engulfing fireball and lumber off the pad, slowly gathering speed as it rose majestically into the sky, launching America's first attempt to land human beings on the moon. The sun had not yet come up and was barely peeking above the horizon as I stood on the grating and peered through the clear bubble helmet I wore. The only sound I could hear came from my ventilation unit. Looking up and down the coastline, my eyes scanned the beaches for miles along the causeway near Cape Canaveral, where more than 1 million people had started gathering the night before, trekking in cars, motorcycles, pickup trucks, campers, and large motorhomes, inching their way through bumper-to-bumper traffic as they sought the perfect launch viewing location. Already people were filling in every available spot of dry ground, and thousands of boats were anchored on the Indian and Banana Rivers near the Cape. Without a good set of binoculars, most of the spectators could not see me, and from my vantage point I could barely see them, but I could see the evidence of them in the flickering campfires that dotted the beaches in the pre-dawn darkness. Everyone knew that something big was about to happen. Because of the danger of explosion should something go wrong, the area immediately near the Saturn V was evacuated except for technicians making their final pre-launch checks. Even if the launch was perfect, no human could stay within several miles of it outside of the firing room, the launch control center at the Cape. The hot gases and thunderous noise would consume anyone standing too close to the rocket at ignition. the VIP spectator area, from which former President Lyndon B. Johnson, the astronauts' families, politicians, celebrities, and others with the coveted special pass would watch the launch, was a full 3 miles away. Even there, the vibrations would be felt, and the roar from the engines would be almost deafening. I looked to the south, where some of the older launch pads were located, and I couldn't help letting my eyes linger on Launch Pad 34, where 2.5 years earlier, three of my fellow astronauts, Gus Grissom, Roger Chaffee, and Ed White, had lost their lives when they were trapped inside their space capsule in a torrid burst of flames during a pre-launch training test for Apollo 1.